Why don't you introduce yourself to us, and maybe how you know me as well. That way they have some context, right, of who you are.
Okay. My name is Peter Ahn. I grew up here in Tacoma and moved into Federal Way. I went to WSU, go Cougs. Any Cougs out here? No, probably all. Hey, go Cougs! Hey, there we go. There we go. And yeah, just graduated with Asian Studies and Philosophy. It's like meant for China, but not intentional. But yeah, I studied there. And yeah, the way I met Pastor Hong was he was actually my youth pastor a long time ago. Actually, I don't think I was in youth. My brother and my sister were in youth, and I was admiring the day that I would go to youth and be discipled by Pastor Hong. But I was still really young when he was leading. But yeah, watched him play a lot of tennis. And I know he has a really fast fastball, like pitching-wise. So I used to be afraid of when he played volleyball or baseball because he just throws it really hard.
So also, his dad is a pastor and was a pastor. He still is a pastor at the previous church that I served in. So we served together for a number of years. And so not only was he in the youth ministry, but also, you know, I served with his dad. And then about a month ago, I ran across him at Costco. You know, well, not surprise, right? Because I always go to Costco, and he was there too. And then he was telling me all about where, you know, his sons were. And then he told me, Peter is in China, which was news to me. And then he proceeded to tell me, you know, we spent a good 30 minutes. Basically, I was very curious as to what he was doing. And then a month later, you know, walks in. So I feel like that was God ordained as well. So thank you. Thank you for that, Peter. So here are some questions, okay? And then as I'm asking those questions again, you know, if you have a question later on, I'll give you that chance as well. So how, you're a young man, you're only 25 years old,
yes.
Right? And so you are peers with whom?
Oh.
Micah.
Micah.
Jane.
Some of,
yeah. So same age, okay? So how, so that means you went to China when you were 22. So is that like right after college?
Right after college.
Okay.
A month after I graduated.
Okay. So most people at that point would be pressured to find a job.
Right.
Right? Because you just completed 4 years of college. So how did you get a vision to go? And what prompted it? And how was it so powerful that you would give up a job, potential job here in the U.S., and then go to this place?
Yeah. The vision, it was written in the Word in Revelation 20, where it says, all nations and all tongues will worship. And it is also tied to Matthew 28, 18 to 20, where it says, make disciples of all nation. You know, so all nation, all tongue. And it's like that idea where it took me a long time, because I would say I was a Christian for all my life, because my dad was being a pastor and whatnot. But it wasn't until 2015 where I actually understood the purpose and the value of missions. Because one question that my leader asked me, which threw me off, was who's responsible for the lives of the people who die not hearing the gospel? And I tried to blame other people, but the reality was, if I identify myself as a Christian, it's also my responsibility, because he has commanded the Christians in Matthew 28 to go make disciples of all nations. So I realized that through my disobedience, I was running away from what he has called me to do.
So at that point, when you felt that prompting, what steps have you taken? So it wasn't like God wrote, you know, in the sky, go to China.
Right. No, he did not. And it took 2 years after that. So I decided to go into leadership, as in like just serving my church. So because I was in college, I served a local church at WSU called Resonate Church, and just started leading people. And my leader and my mentor, he said, why don't you look into leading international students? Because we need a huge help in that area, because we only have one other leader. And I said, why not? And just fell in love with all these international people. Finally learned about UPG groups. Raise your hand if you know what a UPG is. No, so UPG stands for unreached people groups. So unreached means that only 2% of the population is being reached within that people group. So the reaching of that people group is really, really small. A lot of those people that I was hanging out with at my international Bible study were all, or majority were, unreached people groups. And just fell in love with it. And then after a year, so 2016, just went on a mission trip because I thought it would be fun, kind of like you guys did with Thailand. And I just felt this sense of peace and comfort, and my hairs on my arms kind of stuck up because of how comfortable I was and how peaceful it was. So I just meditated, read the Bible, found wisdom, and then my leaders were saying, maybe this is something that you should walk into because this is a God-given thing. And I said, sure, when is that door going to open? And next thing you know, God provided, and he says, hey, a month after you graduate, we're going to send a team there. And I said, well, the door is wide open. I have no job. I just graduated. I have some loans, but that's not too big of an issue. I trust that he will be sovereign. And I just went without a question, without hesitation. I kind of shocked my parents because my parents probably thought I was going to get a job and live with them pretty closely and, you know, be involved with them a lot. But then I decided to move on the other side of the world. So they were shocked.
So you took a little step. Obviously, you mm-hmm. went, you know, on that mission, short-term mission trip. And then mm-hmm. God, you know, showed you further, mm-hmm. like what he wanted you to do. Now, it was right after college. What are some real fears or apprehension, you know, I'm sure, right, because your parents, Korean parents, you know, even pastors, you know, pastors especially don't want their children to become pastors because they know all about it, right? So, you know, what were some of those, you know, maybe second, you know, guessing yourself if there was, or fears, because, you know, young people, as they're considering, you know, maybe perhaps this is for me, but what about this? What about that? Mm-hmm. Could you tell us, you know, maybe?
Yeah. I'll be transparent with you guys. The biggest thing that I was worrying about was my loans. You know, just being fresh out of college, I just had a lot of loans. Well, not a lot, but I still had enough to burden oneself or one family. And I was just really worried that financially I would not be able to go. And yeah, it was just one of those things where I submitted that problem to the Lord, and the Lord said, I'll provide. And it was by a short, small people obedience through other people that I was being supported, which I think we might be talking about later, but God was constantly providing me with financial support, which was a huge blessing. And I have a great family that is willing to help, you know, pay interest and stuff. So it was really helpful. And I think, but also another thing that I was really fearful about is the future. Because when you graduate, you have this expectation to have a job, have a family, have a kid, you know, X, Y, Z, you know, the American dream. But me going to the mission field, I knew that I'm going to be sacrificing a lot, that I might be sacrificing maybe being single for a while, not having a career job, or not having a stable income to help my parents at one point. And my parents right now at the age where they want grandkids. And I'm getting pressured to get to that point where I'm like, I have an older sister and an older brother, but they're putting it on me. So it's kind of weird. I fear the unknown of the future, because there's not a guarantee when it comes to submitting your life to the mission life.
So that was one of the questions. Since you talked about money, how are you being supported right now?
Yeah. It's just, through the grace of God and the miracles of the Lord, but also just through the obedience of other people. I reach out to a lot of people who are interested in the mission field, and I ask them, will you be willing to partner with me or to team up with me? I don't try to say invest, because that sounds kind of corporate, but to partner and to grow my team to reach out to these Chinese folks. So all my support is through donations and sponsorship through other people.
So your church Resonate that sent you there do not actually send you a monthly stipend, unless, of course, you have contacted the members of that church. As individuals, they could support you. Mm-hmm. But as a church, you don't have a steady income.
No. Yeah, so everything is based on, it's just all based on donations. And the reason why we do that is because we believe that as a body, as one, right, we all have different responsibilities. Some people are blessed to be in the workplace. Some people are blessed to be as doctors, teachers, in other places. But also there's people who are, I guess, like the hand or the feet of in other places. So God is using and orchestrating all of us to do one mission, and it's to reach all people group. So it's through their obedience and through also my team's obedience that we're all being supported.
So just to educate you, not every missionary works that way. Some missionaries are supported by a mission agency, such as International Mission Board. That's a Southern Baptist mission agency, huge one. What they do is, if you are an IMB missionary, then you're fully supported by the agency. And then, of course, agency is supported by churches. But not every missionary works that way. There are pros and cons to raising your own support, such as, in this case, Peter. He has to raise his own support. Of course, you know, pro is that if you're supported by the agency, you don't have to worry about money. That portion is gone. But then again, you're kind of taking away that faith element that you have to rely on the Lord. And individual churches and members really have to be supporting, you know, this one person. So there's that more directness in how he is going about it. So it's not right or wrong. It's just different ways of, you know, supporting the mission work. So thank you so much for that. Okay, so maybe this is personal, but like you told me this before, but about how much do you, you know, would a missionary such as yourself, young man, right, in China, need?
Originally, I was raising $1,500 a month. That covered school, housing, because I'm a student in China, as like my platform, so that the government won't just see me as a random tourist who lives there for 3 years, but as a student. And like other things, but because of the direction of where China is going with security, we asked, or my supervisor and a lot of other teams are asking us to raise emergency fund, just in case if we get questioned or if we get blacklisted, that we could find, like, either go to another country to do mission work or to have like a comeback plan B or plan C or type of idea. So my supervisor asked for all of us to raise $2,500 a month.
Okay. Yeah. So talk more about that. What does your typical week look like in China as a missionary? You have mentioned already that you are a student, mm-hmm, there in the college. So could you talk a little more about, you know, how do you actually bring people to Christ?
Yeah. So like I said before, my platform or my background as a student. So if the government asks me anything, I say I'm just this American who studies Chinese at a university.
Now, is that a concern in China?
Studying Chinese?
No. Being discovered that you're really there for missional purposes.
Oh, yes, yes. Yeah, once they find out and identify you as a missionary, they will take you in and take your passport and then blacklist you. So a lot of people, if they get questions, they just leave. Without a doubt, without a question, without any reason. So, but my day-to-day week looks pretty normal to a college student in America, where I go to school in the morning, about 2 or 3 hours learning Chinese, and then I go home, I do homework or other assignments, and then for lunch, I always am intentional about reaching my fellow peers. college students, shop owners, or just like people throughout the day. And I just always try to build a relationship with them, and always try to invite them to an event or try to create an event so that I can invite them into something and to build that relationship. Right now, because of the whole security issue, we have to go for like the long haul of reaching out to people. Because in America, it's really easy to just straight up ask you, do you know Jesus? Do you know Jesus? Do you know Jesus? Kind of thing. But with them, you have to build this relationship that could last 6, 1 year, you know, a really long process. So it's a lot of building up relationships. And on my free time, I always go out and meet new people. So if I'm not meeting people, like friends already know, then I'm meeting more people. The reason why is because if you're a fisherman, you want to cast your net wide and far, and you don't care what kind of fish you're grabbing, you just want to grab all of them. And then from there, determine who could speak English, who's engaged in spiritual conversation, and who wants to receive the gospel.
So you're not doing this alone.
No.
You have a team that's out there doing this with you. Could you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah. So we have a team of 10. One other graduating student is going to come join our team in September. So we have a total of 11. And all of us pretty much graduated and went straight there. We have a family who has 2 kids. They decided to move when their baby is like 2 months old. And they were living, one of them was working at a bank, and they just weren't feeling full. They weren't feeling alive. They were saying, like, there's this kind of boredom at work. It's the spiritual, like, deadness in work. So they said they want to go to China because that's what they're feeling called. And ever since then, they've just been loving it. And we have a couple other people who, also we have another teammate, another couple, who just had a baby in China about 5 months ago, and they're just loving it. They also gave up their career jobs as marketing and teachers just to come because they just felt like that's what their calling is. And so a lot of us took a lot of sacrifice. I didn't have much obligation because I just graduated, but a lot of them, they were having, you know, really good business jobs or corporate jobs that they just gave up to go for missions.
So you've been there for 3 years, and I know that it takes many years, you know, for you to see any fruit, and this wasn't one of the questions, but have you seen any or potential fruit yet?
Yeah, I think there's a lot of fruit. Some people measure fruit by the lives of people who come to know Jesus and to accept and confess and repent that he is Lord. But for what I see as fruit is a scale from negative 10 to positive 10. If someone is at negative 4 and goes all the way to maybe negative 2, I see that as fruit. It doesn't necessarily mean that they're believers, but there's so much progress that's happening. Now, this person who never knew Jesus finally knows who Jesus is, you know, and I think that is fruit by itself. Is it ready to be picked? No, not really. But it still has time. So, but in my ministry, I've seen 2 people come to faith, and one of them came 3 months ago, and it was a long journey. It took 2 years for me to pour into this guy.
Amen.
Yeah.
Amen.
Thank you.
Okay, a couple more questions. So what you're doing as we are listening to you speak, right, it seems like that we could be doing the same thing here, any of us, right, could be doing it here in the U.S.,
yeah.
Like going out and building relationships or playing basketball. You play basketball,
yeah,
right,
basketball.
And that's how you build relationships a lot of times, or tennis or what have you, right? And then you just invite them, right, and have small groups and so on. Again, this is not quite in the thing, but could you speak on American Christianity versus maybe Christianity there in China?
Yeah.
Because you're familiar with, you know, American Christianity, right? You grew up and so on. But there's freshness there, right, that almost draws you to that kind of, right?
Yeah. I would love to share. I'm sorry if I come off as a little blunt or harsh, but I believe that even just in my life, I've been a very sensitive Christian. And it's very circumstantial because if the music isn't good, then I won't go to church. If they want a good children's ministry, I'm going to go find another church. There's all these different things. Like if they're not charismatic, I'm not going to go to that church. If they're more theological, I'll go to that church. There's all these different requirements I had when I was a Christian. But the reality is, like, there's no option when it comes to church in China. There's house churches, but they're so underground and they're so, like, suppressed. They are forced to just go down to the pure principles of what a church is and nothing more. They can't play loud music when they worship. Most of them do hymns or a cappella. Even do they'll just play like a Hillsong song on their iPhone and then just sing along. That's worship. Some people I've heard that they only worship at late at night, so when the officers are sleeping. And there's like all these different things. There's like a huge cost when it comes to even just going to church that we don't really realize. Like for us, it's like the cost is, I got to wake up an hour early, you know. But as one, it starts at 12, so there's no reason for you not to go to church. But for some people, it's a work day. It's a weekend. I want to sleep in. But the reality is, it's like, that's not a cost. That's just you being selfish. The cost for them is so high. Even deciding to become a believer, they are pretty much saying, I am going to submit all benefits as a Chinese and become a Christian. And what that means is if you declare yourself as a Christian in China, you lose a lot of benefits. If you're trying to go into the corporate world, if you declare yourself as a Christian, you cannot make a certain salary. There's a salary cap for Christians. You can't get promoted, so you only could be like the low-class worker. And right now, my friend who actually became a believer, he just graduated. He's been looking for a job. And because he's declaring himself as Christian, which he should do if you are a believer, he just says, I can't get a job because they are saying, because the requirement, I have the requirements, but I declared myself as Christian, so they're just denying me. They gave him an interview, but they say, they only do a 2-minute interview, and they say, hey, we'll find someone else because he's a Christian. So the other cost is like family. A lot of people in China, if they tell their parents they're Christians, they get disowned. Their parents will shame them, disrespect them, take away all privileges because they consider Christianity to be shameful because of all the propaganda of the government saying, Christians are corrupt, they're violent, they use like the small examples of the radicals that, during the imperialism time, which is so many years ago. And they use that example of Christians are violent. That's a terrorist mindset, quote unquote. So there's a huge cost with them, and for us, we don't really realize it. That we don't count the cost to go to church. We don't count the cost to do Bible study. We don't count the cost of becoming a Christian. But for them, the moment you ask them, "Do you want to be a Christian?" is when they count the cost. And some of my friends right now, to this day, that I've been pouring into, they're not saying they're Christians yet because they don't want to count that cost. Because they're afraid of what the world will see them as and what the parents will see them as and be suppressed because they're Christians. So a lot of them say, I'll believe when I need it. So it's been a really long, hard walk with them.
So as a missionary or even as a pastor, right, there's a temptation of wanting to see people converted, right? Mm-hmm. Somebody saying, yes, I'm a Christian, I believe. And so it's easy for us to have them bypass You know, you don't have to make that decision now where you declare to the government that you're a Christian. But, you know, just believe now, right? Just say the prayer, and then we'll deal with that later, right? But it seems like what you're doing is, even before they become a Christian, you're having them count the cost. Mm-hmm. This, if you become a Christian, this is a price that you will have to pay. Mm-hmm. Are you willing to pay it? Because there are missionaries that are out there that are actually not doing that. Just believe, and then whatever else, it's cultural. You know, you can kind of go, you know, and fudge a little bit here and there.
Right.
So obviously you're not going there.
Okay. No, it's bound to happen. There's persecution that's going to happen as a Christian. We're not the prosperity gospel. We are the gospel. So, you know, we're sharing that. And we tell them immediately, even before. Because... For my sake, the worst thing that could happen to me is get kicked out of China. But for them, it could be imprisonment, it could be torture, it could be, you know, just this whole shameful thing that could happen to them. So we really want them to just make sure that they're ready. They're counting that cost, they're counting that possibility. Maybe it won't ever happen to them, but we just want them to know because, that's the reality of being a Christian in China. But we always tell them, He is worth it, He is worth it, He is worth it. That He will provide, He will protect, He will do everything because He is able. So a lot of people are still in fear, driven by fear. So we're trying to just encourage them and just pray for them.
Amen. This is the last question from me, and then you guys can ask him questions if you'd like. We're still doing good on time. Peter, what do you want to encourage? And you kind of already started going there. What do you want to encourage our people, you know, to live the life of mission here? Could you just give us a little encouragement or kick in the pants?
Yeah. Pastor Hong said this before during my introduction. I don't like to be called missionary. And the reason is I believe that what I do is a Christian thing. It's not a mission thing. It's not a missionary act. You know, because I'm a missionary, I do this. No, it's because I'm a Christian, I do this. So I believe that no matter who you are or where you are, what you do, this is what we need to do. Because when Jesus commanded, go make disciples of all nations, he wasn't talking to, all right, businessmen, only you are going to go make disciples of all nations. No, he said to all Christians, we are all called to go make disciples of all nations. And I just want to encourage you guys to see the opportunity in the place that you are in right now and to say, God, use me in this mission field and to change my eyes to see work as a mission field. And because there's a lot of people who don't know Jesus in your workplace or in your classroom, or just in your everyday life, that we're not, you know, we're not just working. You know, we're working in a place that is broken. And the Lord wants them to know Jesus as well, to know him as well. So I've been trying to just really encourage people to not call me missionary, but to call me as a brother who happens to live in China. And I just really want to encourage people to see that the mission field is right in front of you. And there's a lot of unreached people group. There's actually 350 people groups in America alone who are just being unreached. They're just here to study, or refugees, or people who work for big corporate jobs as like international workers at like Amazon and whatnot. They're all here, you know, and they're ready to receive, but we're just comfortable with our lives. So I just really want to just encourage you guys to not only just, think about China, but also to think about your workplace to be the mission field. The Starbucks runs is the mission field. Your everyday life is the mission field. When I was in college, I put God in a box. And I said, okay, God, I'm going to put you in this box, and I'm going to go to class. I'll come back, and I'll talk to you a little bit. and then I'll put you back in the box when I have to go to work. And the reality is, God is so much bigger than this box, but we try to put him in this box because we want our own time, our own space, and we try to separate school, work, and spiritual life into three different compartments. But the reality is, God should be in all those three compartments, that, you know, and that he works and he is powerful in all of those three areas. So I just really want to encourage people to bring out God out of the box at work and at school and your everyday life.
So evangelism to you is not simply asking somebody to come to your church service, because you can't really do that, right?
No.
Evangelism to you is, hey, could you meet with me for lunch, mm-hmm. right? And then have that spiritual conversation. And then hopefully maybe two or three of you could just gather in your apartment mm-hmm. and have a Bible study, and that's church.
Right.
And that's how majority of the churches are in China, mm-hmm. right? My understanding is. So in America, I think most of us, when we hear the word evangelism, oh, I'm going to invite him to our church, right? But that's not necessarily, it's okay, right? You don't have to invite them to this service or even to our church. You could be disciplers where you are, in your own home, and you're expanding the kingdom of God. Nowhere in the Bible does it tell us to expand your church, right, or grow your church. But really, right, expand God's kingdom. Make disciples is what God tells us in the Great Commission. And so we just want to see, right, our heart, whether, right, missionary or whoever, whatever you want to call yourself, or pastor, our goal is the same, and that is to turn the hearts and minds of the people toward Christ to become fully functional followers, right? Dedicated followers of Christ. And so, any question that I haven't asked or you have, any practical question? Do you have a girlfriend? You know, type of... any question you want to ask at this point to Peter? He said no. So all the single ladies, there you go. All right. Marco. So he's not Chinese, by the way. I know he looks Chinese, but he's Korean.
Korean.
So could you tell us a little bit about your, you know, language, you know, and learning and so on?
It's tough. Yeah, it's real hard. When you hear people say learning Chinese is hard, they're being serious. There's no joke. But when it comes to sharing, Marco, your question, when it comes to sharing, the goal for me and our team is that one day we will be able to speak in their mother language, that we can speak the gospel in their tongue. But for right now, the reality is we're not there yet. So what we try to focus only, when we're doing ministry, we only try to focus on people who are pretty good at English. Right now I'm learning how to share the gospel in Chinese fully. But so then I'll say, like, you know, Shangdi, which is God. I'll say, you know, a couple words that I know to, like, kind of say that, like, this is also in your language, but not there yet. But I use, like, maybe like 20% Chinese, 75% English.
Because they are drawn, right? These Chinese students, like a lot of the people in other countries, are drawn to those people who are English speakers. They want to practice their English. And I've told you before that really all you need to do is to be able to speak English, and you can go to anywhere in the world and evangelize. And so there's a living proof of that. Okay, so thank you so much for that question, Marco. Anybody else? Jojo?
That's a good question. The culture is very different from American culture, which is why they say if you are ever going to go to China or any other country, that you're going to experience culture shock for the first 6 months. And then after 6 months, after 2 years, so 2 year mark, you also receive culture shock. And then after that, I think it's like 5 years, and then it kind of, it just, the gap of culture shock kind of expands. But there's always going to be a lot of things that you're going to be dealing with, like just behaviors and other things. But when it comes to the gospel, they are a very shame and honor based culture. So you wouldn't say the word sin, because sin won't, it doesn't weigh the same to them. So for their definition of sin is, have you murdered anyone? Have you stolen anything? Have you done any like crazy crimes, pretty much? So if you say you are a sinner, they say, no, I never killed anyone. I never stole. So it doesn't really line up. But if you say, have you shamed anyone? You know, you'll get that little like, yeah, I have. You know, that, and you would say you have shamed God instead of saying you have sinned against God. So you have shamed God, and that has more of a weight to them. So if you're sharing the gospel, you just say you shamed God. And that's, you're not changing the gospel. You're not, you know, you're not altering the meaning of the gospel. You're just using a contextual word that relates to them culturally. So you just use shame and honor in that sense.
Awesome question. Thank you. Anybody else? Yes, sir. Oh. Mr. Taylor?
Yes.
Just one.
Yes, sir. Thank you. Yes, sir.
So the question was, will you? And you said, yes, sir. So that's good. Awesome. Victoria, did you have a question? So those of you who couldn't hear, so China and America, right? Trump and Xi Jinping, a lot of tension. So do you feel the effects of it?
No. Because the reason why is because I work with college students, and they're just so, I guess, sheltered that when they see a foreigner, their eyes just open up. So a lot of the older people, they when I tell them I'm American, they are like, oh, is that so? You know, kind of like that, you know, like that grudging kind of or hatred kind of voice. Even if I say Korean too, because Korea also had that trade war with China as well. So it's like a lose-lose if I tell them. So I just tell them I'm Chinese and just speak to them in Chinese. So if I get a taxi, I just tell them I'm Chinese because it just saves me time and, you know, so.
Okay, so not so much in his context.
In my context.
But in other contexts, a lot of missionaries are being rounded up and being kicked out of the country as we speak. Mm-hmm. And any other question? Going once. Going twice. All right. Thank you, Peter, so much for your time.
Well, thank you so much.